Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations with experienced leaders and coaches as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspectives, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. So let's get into it. In this episode, I'm joined by Lucy Nicholson, a registered somatic movement educator and movement analyst who works with leaders on something that many of us have never been taught to pay attention to, our bodies. Most leadership development focuses on what we think, what we say, and how we behave. Very little focuses on what our body is doing and what it's telling us in the moments that matter most. Lucy brings a fascinating and genuinely different perspective to leadership presence, decision making, communication, and what it means to show up as your whole self. This is one of those conversations that will make you think about leadership in a way you probably never have before. Thank you very much for joining us. This is a topic which I am dying to find out much more about. Let's start then. For those who've never come across this before, in practical terms, what do you mean by somatic approach to leadership?
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Alec. So the word somatic comes from the Greek word soma, which is about the lived experience of being in our bodies. So if you think about the way we learn about ourselves through our biology lessons, through anatomy, we're learning things from books and we're learning things that have been gained from cadavers, from dead bodies. We're not very often taught about what is it to live in our bodies, what is that lived experience. And so somatic practice is very much about that, is about while we're in it, and we're alive, what is that experience and how can we be present to it rather than learning it from someone else or something else? So it's a lot to do with presence and building presence and being aware in the moment. It's also very connected to the mind-body relationship. So we, in the West particularly, we live in a society very informed by Descartes' I think, therefore I am. We're a very mind-favoring system, there's no bad thing there. A lot has been gained from the pursuit of the mind, and yes to thinking, yes to approaching things in that way. But we are also sensing beings, we are feeling beings, we're intuitive beings. And so somatic practice is really about this building a conscious awareness of all of our parts. So recognizing our thinking selves, as well as the feeling, sensing, intuiting, moving self, so that we kind of experience wholeness and recognize what it is to be our whole selves, I suppose, in a nutshell, is what somatic practice is all about.
Okay, that's really interesting. What would I actually notice in a leader, for example, who is working somatically?
So it's that idea of not leaving any parts of us behind. So again, to reiterate the importance of the thinking self, I'm not suggesting we kind of throw our minds away. and I'm sure there are very much some decision-making leadership scenarios where we kind of have to. We have to be in mind only. There's no room for feeling. There's no room for attachment. But we are more than our thinking selves. And so when we're able to approach relationships, approach our communication, approach decision making from all of us, from our whole selves, I think there's an authenticity that comes from that way of approaching leadership. That sometimes it's being in touch with what I'm feeling elsewhere in my body, or it's being more aware in the moment to make an intervention that maybe slightly shifts my quality of movement, or maybe I change my level because I'm recognizing I need to be at eye contact with someone. Maybe it's about listening to parts of ourselves that we might not normally let ourselves listen to that allows our authentic self to come through. So I think authenticity is something you would see in a leader that's working from a somatic background. I also think, because my work is rooted in movement, with movement comes agility, comes change. That I'll speak to you a little bit about the system that I work from, and Omgard Barteneff, who was the founder of this system, spoke about movement as change. Movement is change. And if we are moving, we are changing. So we develop this ability to be more agile, more responsive, more in the moment. So something I'm really interested in is how this work, this becoming more present, becoming more aware of our bodies, moving our bodies more to pay more attention to them, is really the preparatory work so that when we're in the moment, when we're in relationship with someone, when we have to make a decision, when we're stood in front of a room of people, I then have lots of things I can draw on, experiences that I've had prior that I can draw on to feel like I can be more responsive in the moment to what's happening in front of me rather than perhaps what I was expecting to be in front of me. So that kind of in the moment responsiveness, I think, is something that this work really supports. And also, perhaps even more importantly, it supports us. It's absolutely a facilitator of building relationship with other people, and it absolutely supports us to be a better leader for other people, but really it also supports us as leaders. It allows me to go to my body as a resource. If you think of all the things that people say when we want to support our well-being or when we want to feel more confident, they're all body-based things. It's all about grounding ourselves. It's all about finding our alignment, engaging with our breath, thinking about the space in which we're occupying and how much of that space we want to spread out into, about where we're placing our focus and our attention. They're really body-based things, but like everything, they take practice. So I suppose I'm an advocate of just practicing being in our bodies so that when we're in the moment, we have a resource to draw on so that we can kind of make the best decisions for ourselves and for other people.
Just from what you were saying there, what's coming up for me, and I'm picturing a leader who is probably operating under pressure. They've got a lot of weight that they're carrying as a result, and maybe they feel for what this pressure is, there is no right answer to try and resolve it. If we think back to what you've been saying there, why is this way of working or thinking, I could argue, why does that help a leader? Have they got to, for example, think about what does my body know in this particular moment? How do I therefore need to come across? What's going on in the mind of the leader at that time?
Yes. So as some people might say, what does your gut say? I think that's a body-based, that there's so many kind of body-based sayings around this, I think. So yeah, maybe it's a little bit of kind of somewhere else in your body is giving you the answer. Maybe it's that, but also it's what's happening in your body when you're under that pressure and how is that impeding your ability to be your best self in that moment? And if you're not noticing, if you're just in your head going, this is heavy, this is hard, I don't know, then that's going to influence your decision. If in that moment you're going, goodness, I recognize my heart has increased in its rate. Oh, I need to take a breath. I'm just going to step for a moment. I'm just going to ground my feet into the floor. I'm going to stop sitting down. I'm going to stand up. Just going to bounce a little bit. And I know that when I bounce, that means I'm accessing my weight. And that means I find me in the space rather than being associated with everything else that's happening around me. I'm just going to come back to me. Here I am. I sense myself. I'm in the space. I'm grounded. Oh, I'm just going to go through my joints and I'm going to stack them up so that I'm in alignment. I'm not kind of sending any part of my body elsewhere. I'm all of me is here in alignment. Just by doing that, by accessing breath, coming into alignment, grounding myself, finding my center. Who knows what will happen in that moment, but something will change. you have changed yourself, so something will change. It might mean just you find some clarity. It might mean just you calm down a little and therefore you feel more able to make a decision. It may be you suddenly become more accessible to other people, that other people go, oh, they're calmer. I feel like I can ask this question now, or I can approach them now. Mm-hmm. So it might, you changing your body might change how other people feel like they can relate to you. So who knows kind of what would happen, but something different would happen by just shifting your body in the space. And these things can be kind of really simple and actually things that people know. I think, you know, if you asked anybody, what do you need to do to come into alignment, ground yourself and engage with your breath? If you really thought about it, people know how to do that. It's just that we're not necessarily encouraged to, nor do we give priority to our body as a resource. So I suppose part of my work is just working with people to give them permission that in these moments, you don't always have to go to your head. Your body could help you also. Your body can help your head. Your head can help your body. We are one. The body and the mind are connected. They're all you. So why not use all of you as a resource to support you in those moments?
For those that maybe are not sure what to do, what kind of initial tips could they do to get them back to being grounded and actually trying to get themselves aligned to what their heart and their gut are saying? I'm actually thinking here about holographic thinking, because the other part of that is the heart. So what are there a couple of quick exercises we could do to try and help us there?
Yeah, absolutely. So this idea of alignment, I think, is a really quick and easy one. So we are a being that is designed. We have bilaterality, I could never say that word, in our design, which means we have two of most things. We have a right and a left side. And often we're not necessarily thinking about ourselves in relationship to our human design. So simply putting our 2 feet flat on the floor, side by side, and feeling our feet on the floor, feeling the ground underneath our feet. I would always recommend taking shoes off in that moment to kind of really feel the sole of the foot against the earth. So this, most of the time, is us as humans, is the place where we experience other, the place where we are most in contact with something other than ourselves is when we place our feet on the ground. So just that, as simple as that, placing 2 feet on the ground and just really feeling the connection between sole of foot and the earth can make a huge difference to that feeling of feeling like you're in the space. I think so much of what happens to us when we're feeling stressed or anxious or overwhelmed is we feel like we're being pulled outside of ourselves a little bit. Mm-hmm. That we're being, people say, I'm being pulled in so many directions. So that idea of just you plant your feet on the floor, here you are. And then using our human design. So ankles come above our feet. So letting your ankles be side by side, allowing your knees to then be in relationship to the ankles, allow your hips to be in relationship to your knees, allow your shoulders to be in relationship to your hips. So we use our human design to find our alignment. When we do that, more often than not, when I guide people through that process of just finding their alignment, you hear in the room this, because suddenly space is made in the body. The lungs are then revealed because we're not cutting one side off or closing off our front or sitting with one of my patterns that doesn't serve me is to sit with my hip outside of alignment. I'm always sitting into one of my hips. So immediately when I just bring my 2 hips into alignment, my lungs feel like they can breathe. Suddenly this space is created in the torso. And then what that reveals is a kind of lengthening in my neck. When I remind myself, something that I find really useful is I remind myself that my head is not screwed onto my neck. My head is quite loosely, my skull is quite loosely held onto the top of my spine through some tendons and muscles. Absolutely, it's safe, but it's not screwed in there. It doesn't have to be held really tight. So a little nod, a little shake of my head to just remind myself it's not that held, just again relieves a little bit of tension around my neck and my shoulders. So when you, there's a real saying in the work that I do is when you change a part, you change the whole, which I know is a real kind of systems approach to thinking about the body. So when I come into alignment, I make a change, which then reveals my breath and allows my lungs to breathe. When my lungs breathe, suddenly my head becomes looser and I relieve the tension in my neck. When I ground my feet into the floor, the changes, I go, oh, I'm here. And so just it can be as simple as that, which some people might just say stand up straight. But, you know, it's that idea of what I'm doing when I do that is consciously taking myself through my body. Here are my feet. Here are my joints. Oh, there's my lungs. Oh, here's my head, which just keeps that's that idea of kind of conscious awareness of myself in the space. And the more awareness I can bring to myself in the space, it supports me, but it also then really supports the choices I'm making and how I communicate with other people. Because when we lose that awareness, we sometimes communicate with people how we don't mean to. When we're stressed, we're overwhelmed, potentially we are feeling scared about what we have to do. There's lots of people there. They're all relying on us. If we're not really conscious about how we treat our bodies in that moment, often all of that anxiety, stress comes out and gets passed on to everybody else. But by just taking that moment to bring some conscious awareness, here I am, here are my parts, I can then really decide how I then choose to pass on information to other people. I can be more conscious in the moment of how I communicate.
So I guess, I mean, by doing that, are you also giving permission for people to pause and have that silence? Because I think one of the things I see a lot of in the workplace is when someone asks us a question or we need to deliver something, there is this kind of unofficial pressure. We've got to get back immediately. But from what I'm picking up there, you're saying, well, actually, we do this with our body. We're allowing ourselves to have silence, to pause, think Absolutely. About how we're going to come back across to others.
Yeah, silence and stillness. Mm. They can feel deafening. And I think when you think about what I'm saying, it's really simple. You don't really need me to coach you through it. But the reason why it's so difficult and the reason why people don't do it is that doing less is often very difficult. Is that it feels more vulnerable, feels more scary to stand and do nothing in the face of something that feels very heavy or pressured. To feel like you have permission to make that choice, I just need a moment to be still and quiet before I, you know, go into this next big thing. We don't really live in a society that gives us that kind of permission. It's, you know, in your working life, you have to be fast, you have to be moving, you have to keep going. And then, yes, go to your yoga class to recover afterwards. And there you can be still or whatever it is you do to recover. I suppose I'm being an advocate of bringing those moments into your working life and actually showing that to other people. I think is a very brave and very inspirational thing to do as a leader. If you're modeling that, I'm just going to stand for a moment. I'm just going to find my alignment. Oh, I'm just going to take a breath. I'm just going to find stillness for a moment so I feel like I can make the best decision I can. If you're modeling that to the people you're working with, therefore giving them permission to perhaps do the same thing, I think immediately you would notice a difference in the what I call the dynamosphere, the quality of movement and the quality of experience people are happening in your working space. It's this kind of, I suppose, like you're saying, this unwritten false pressure that everything has to be immediate. And if you go through that little alignment exercise I just spoke through, it's a minute, 2 minutes max, really. Mm. That's not a lot. But actually could be really transformative in your own well-being and in the way you're communicating with your team.
What was the moment or the experience that convinced you this matters for leaders and for others? What got you into all this?
Yeah. Less than traditional journey, I suppose. I'm a dance artist. I trained in dance. I still am a dance artist and work in the dance field. I trained in performance and technique and choreography. And a lot of my work was working within a community context, often working with people, bringing them into the dance field where perhaps they might not have normally had the chance to. So often working with some more hard to reach, perhaps vulnerable communities. And this led me to work with an organisation called Dance United, where we ran a program called The Academy in Bradford, which was working particularly with young people and adults sometimes who were at risk of or who had been in the criminal justice system. We ran a 12-week contemporary dance program, which you might not think would work, but goodness me, did it work. Kind of coming to the body and coming to the physicality of moving creatively for people who were in great distress in their lives was unbelievably effective. And it was really in that work where I realised the nuanced and specific choices I made with my body made a difference in building relationship, building positive relationship with people who might not have any positive relationships in their life, and to people who were hypersensitive about the way you carried your body. If they saw any sense of threat, immediately the relationship was over. So I recognized it was nuanced, it was subtle, but that to build a relationship, I had to be really conscious of the way I carried myself and the way I communicated with my body. And that in moments of escalation, of which there were many in that context, again, what I did with my body made a difference. And sometimes it was different to what my instinct was. So sometimes if someone was doing something with their body that felt threatening, or someone was speaking in a way that felt like it was leading to escalation, and personally I might have wanted to meet that to feel like I could defend myself, actually I needed to be more conscious in the moment, more consciously aware of going, I don't want to meet what I'm seeing. I want to offer something different to try to de-escalate the situation. So being really conscious in the moment what my body was doing to support others came from that work, was my kind of key takeaway from that work. And then for many years, I then started working at the University of Lancashire, as it's now known, was UCLAM in Preston, running the dance degree there, delivering facilitation skills for a lot of young dancers who were going out to be community dance artists themselves, as well as teaching technique and choreography and performance. And it was through that I was introduced to the Laban-Bartenieff movement system, which is named after the two pioneers of the work, Rudolf Laban and Irmgard Bartenieff. And the system is a kind of comprehensive way of languaging, understanding, experiencing and observing all human movement. So it sits within a dance context, but then really sits outside of dance as well. It's really about human movement. So I've used that for many years kind of informally to support the work I was doing at the university, particularly to support working with training dancers to support their facilitation skills, how to be good teachers. And it led me to train in the system. So I'm now a certified movement analyst and a somatic movement educator. So it's kind of all of those experiences of recognizing through my own experience the power of the choices I make with my body make a difference. And then working with training dancers as they're teaching massive groups of primary school children, or they're going into quite difficult high schools to try to teach dance when none of the pupils want to do it or are engaged in it, which is something you have to deal with quite a lot as a dance artist. And recognizing that when I offered feedback about what they did with their bodies in that moment to support them, and seeing it make a difference, seeing it make a change, things like try and take up more space, widen your stance, go into your far reach kinesphere rather than keeping your hands, look out beyond them rather than at one single person, or giving them little bits of advice about how they could shift their attention in the space, how they could think about the space they're occupying, and particularly the quality of movement that they're engaging with, noticing the difference that was making, led me to make this transition into a leadership context. And first of all, kind of trying it out. Does it work? Does it cross over? Is it relevant? And then having a kind of really overwhelming yes from the trials of that, of people going, this is what's missing, actually. This is what's needed in the leadership world, is this more whole-bodied approach to the idea of leadership. So, yeah, that's what led me into this world.
And what's your biggest success with a leader? Is there a story that really stands out for you, and you think from where a leader was, they then spent time with you, and what they then became?
I was working with a lady, and she was talking about her feeling like she could never make an impact. I think a common thing for women, actually, I'm good at my job. I know what I'm doing. I'm really good at, like, I'm doing it. I meet all my deadlines. I'm doing everything that's asked of me. I read everything that I'm meant to read. I do everything I'm meant to do, but I just don't ever feel like anyone listens to me, or that anyone. And from a movement analyst perspective, this idea of impact really comes from the way in which we engage with understanding our weight of what I would call weight effort, and this idea of there's a different ways of understanding that. We can have a very light touch, or we can kind of really engage the strength of our weight and literally make an impact in the space when we take our weight into the space with us. And not to be over-gendered about it, but often men tend to be able to access that a little bit easier in a leadership space than women. And that was something that this lady was struggling with, was taking herself literally into the space. So she was talking about it in terms of not being listened to or not being heard. But we worked at it from a movement perspective of we did some stomping. We accessed weight. We did the bounces. We looked at these ideas of here I am, all the different movement ways that she could experience kind of really making an impact. And it was sometimes uncomfortable for her. She didn't want to do that. And with this kind of stronger use of weight came a stronger use of voice. This idea then led to her idea of phrasing. And we realized that sometimes she was halfway through her sentence and people hadn't even realized that she'd started talking. And so we started looking at thinking about the phrasing of the way she spoke, putting the weight at the start of her sentences. So rather than, actually, I was thinking the other day that maybe what we could do is, and how about is, she started going, by the way, I was thinking that. So she really put the weight into the start of her sentences. And with that, she would bring her body with it. Her body would support that kind of impactful statement. And it made a difference. She started to feedback that, oh, they listened to me the other day. Or I said something the other day and people went, oh, that's a good idea. And so she was a kind of mid-level in her organization. She had people she was answering to, as well as a small team that she was working with. And it got her noticed. Things shifted for her. And as in all of this work, it's a practice. So it's not do one thing and then that's it. You're sorted. And it's something she really had to practice. And sometimes it went a bit wrong. Sometimes it didn't work for her. Sometimes she tried and then nothing happened. But over time, she said that things started to shift. People responded to her differently.
And does she find that now easy to continue doing? Does it become a new learned behaviour? Mm. She feels naturally, this is who I now am, that kind of big shift.
Well, I think it's more about becoming conscious to it. So a lot of, as a coach, what I'm doing is helping people to recognize their preferences and their patterns. So this lady had a preference for lightweight, for using lightweight effort, or sometimes not engaging with her weight at all. And so really what I'm doing as a coach is I'm opening up a palette of movement potential, like an artist palette or a box of chocolates, if you like, and recognizing that there's this one that you always go for, this kind of caramel covered chocolate is the thing you're normally going for. But look at all these other choices. And the more you experience those other choices, the more easily they are to find when you need them. So it's not so much that this lady is now always kind of stomping around with her strong weight everywhere she goes. It's more that she now has access to it, and she knows now how to access it when she needs it. And in the moment when she goes, oh, they're not hearing me, or oh, my voice is not being heard, she can now consciously go, oh, find your weight. She does her own little exercise to do that. She shifts her phrasing of the way she speaks, and she finds it. So I don't know if it was a permanent shift for her, but I do think it's her conscious awareness to the choices she's making in terms of her body and her movement have shifted. Yeah, good, yeah.
Wow, that is absolutely fascinating. And the fact that she, you know, she is accessing a new behavior box of what she's trying to do. So as we come to the end, what's a couple of key points or thoughts that our listeners should take away?
I suppose the key words for me are about listening and noticing. And that this work, of course, it's serving us as leaders to be the best we can for other people, but really it's about ourselves. It's about the self-other relationship. It's about becoming more present for ourselves so that we're able to be more present for other people. So it's doing the work not necessarily with other people in mind, but doing the work for ourselves, and that then reveals something that allows us to be in a better position for other people. So it's trying to notice our patterns, trying to notice what's going on in our bodies. And sometimes it can be really subtle. It can just be, oh, that's a little bit faster than it normally is. Sometimes we notice it in reflection. So I know after this meeting, I'm going to reflect on all the movement things that I did. But they're useful because then I can become more aware of them in the future. So it's not necessarily making massive shifts all at once, or trying to solve, it's not really about trying to solve something, if you like. It's just about bringing more awareness. So starting to notice, do I have a preference for doing things very quickly or more slowly? Do I have a preference for ongoingness and moving through and keeping moving continuously as I speak and I move? Or do I kind of tend to like to put nice big full stops and boundaries into the way that I move and talk? Do I like to bring my weight into everything? I know that when I get very passionate about things, my weight really shifts in the way that I talk about things. Or do I have this kind of lighter approach to things? And do I think that's having any impact on the way that I'm communicating or interacting with people? They're the things, I suppose, where as a coach, that's what I'm offering. I'm not coming to teach necessarily you how to do things. I'm asking pertinent questions that help us to arrive at recognizing what our patterns and our preferences are. Then I'm offering alternatives. What happens if we try this? What happens if we try that? So that then we open up this palette to draw on in the moment. So the first job really is the noticing, the asking ourselves of questions. Have I ever thought about how I move? Have I ever thought about what my preferences are when I talk or I'm in communication with other people? Have I ever thought about what I do with my body when I have a conversation? And if you haven't, then that's the first thing, really, is just start to notice that. Yep.
So stop, give time for reflection and look back.
Absolutely.
Maybe it comes back to, how have I performed today? What's worked, what hasn't worked? But giving your time for that, because I do see with a number of leaders I work with, they're not giving themselves any reflection time. But from your story and from what we've been discussing, here's another important reason why we just need to stop and give that time for reflection.
Absolutely. Advocating stillness and silence as a powerful tool in supporting you as a leader, that they're not indulgences, they're not treats, they're not things that waste time. They're things that actually make you a better leader. Yep.
Lucy, that was absolutely fascinating. If people want to contact you or find out more information, what's the best ways they can get in touch?
So I'm Lucy at inmovement.co.uk. I have a website, which is In Movement. Or you can catch me on Instagram at Lucy In Movement. Or find me on LinkedIn. You can find me anywhere. But yeah, do get in touch, send me a message. I always take my time to set up whether it's the right thing for people or the best way they'd like to work, so we can have a conversation about that. And I can work with groups or individuals. So yeah, having that initial conversation about what might work best for the context you're in would be the first step. Yeah.
Lucy, thank you so much. And until next time.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Leading. If this episode was useful, follow or subscribe so you don't miss the next one, and share it with someone who'd appreciate it. And if you've got a minute, a quick rating or review really helps more people find the show.